Welcome back to Movie Trailer Reviews Podcast. It's your host Chris here with Ro and Brandon, and we are here, well, at least they're here, to review How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World. I was just mentioning that I have not seen any of these films, which is why I didn't go. This is the third one in the trilogy, right? It's a trilogy, right?
Yeah, it's the last
one. Were there like spinoff films? I feel like there were more than three of these films.
There are Netflix like kids spinoff films.
Okay.
That are not part of like the main thing. Disney does that with their stuff all the time. This isn't Disney, but they'll have like Shrek this, and then Shrek goes camping. Like, it's like the earnest thing that they do with kid films. It's ridiculous.
Well, that's what I thought, because I was like, yo, they say this is the third one, but I feel like I've seen something for How to Train Your Dragon like every year since they first came out, and I've just never.
There's one place called How to Train Your Dragon Legends, or something like
that. Yeah. It's weird. Like, I never watched the first two, so I was like, I'm already too far behind, so I just did not go to this one here. But you guys did, so take it away.
This is the place where I get to say, you know, these are books, right?
They're always books,
right? I feel like they're always books.
Well, that's why you. Yes, they're always gonna be books. Shut up, y'all.
There's
so many little spinoffs that seem like they're weird. They're like How to Be a Pirate, The Dragon's Curse, all the kid shows that come from Cressida Cowell's book series.
I swear.
It's also about and kids.
What'd you say?
It's also about money and kids. They ain't had to turn all of them in their little cartoon. They just did it because there's money involved.
Well, yeah. And it's dragons.
Yeah.
Merchandising.
I'm surprised this isn't a Judd Apatow produced production, because all of the people that he would hire to be in his films do voices for this series consistently. You know, Jay, Jonah, TJ, who is gone, Christopher Mintz. These are all people that would be Judd Apatow in a Judd Apatow film about something.
That is true. But they have to have something to do when he doesn't give them work.
Well, they're fine now. Like, Jay, you've never seen Jay Burchell or whatever in anything, because he has this. He is completely fine.
It's good for him. I mean, would you rather him make crap movies all day?
No, it's good. I'm wondering what he's going to, if we're going to start seeing him in films again after this.
Probably. So, did you see the first two?
I was like Chris until we went to see this Tuesday. So I was like Chris until Monday. Since Monday was President's Day, I was like, well, let me go ahead. And since I'm going to see the third one and I've never seen How to Train Your Dragon, I might as well go ahead and watch it. It's just something about the trailer and Jay Burchell doing the main character's voice just turned me off from wanting to deal with it. I don't dislike him, but he has this very nasally, nerdy tone that I just don't like, this geeky, wimpy shit that goes on about him. And I'm just like, I don't feel like listening to just his voice for a main character for however many hours the film is. So I sat down and I watched the first one, and I was like, oh, I actually like this shit. This is pleasantly good. It's not too kiddy. It's kind of grown up, but it's not super grown up.
Can I just say real quick that I thought that maybe I should check it out too, because when I saw the last one and he was like throwing his like fake leg to the dragon, I was like, this motherfucker lose a leg? Like, am I missing something here? So no. I was like, wait, maybe this is more adult than I thought it was gonna be.
No, there's absolutely a cohesive story here. Like, there's a whole bond between him and his dragon. And it works, man. The first film is very basic and it's to the point, but it has its moments and you actually like all the characters. They get to the second film and it's pretty much like continuing the story, I think 4 years later or something. Yeah. And there's an enemy who is played by, sounds like Digimon Hantu, or I couldn't tell if it was him or the other African dude with the angry voice.
The other, because there's one.
They both, him and Digimon both be sounding angry to me. I'd be like, they the same nigga.
You're fired.
I probably am, but it's cool. I'll be back to pick up my check.
We're going to be close.
But yeah, he's the villain. And I thought that was dope. He had like villain dreads and he was walking around in like a dragon, like a chic dragon blanket, like, but he used it as a cape. I was like, oh, this is pretty dope.
And that character's name is Drago, and it is played by Digimon Hatsu. Just in case you was wondering if you had proper voice identification. You do.
I know I did, because they both named Digimon Hatsu. They're the same nigga.
Oh, you're... See? Canceled see? And fired in one review.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a Marvel Netflix show. But I watched the second one, and I like that they were able to... They don't do too much. I feel like a lot of films would try to do everything that they did in this whole trilogy in one movie. And it's kind of like blowing your whole load in one 90-minute film. And they don't really develop a lot of this stuff. And the film isn't allowed to be playful. This one, these dragon films, they have a story that makes sense. It's consistent. The characters actually grow, and you get to grow with them. So any kid that started out watching this when the first one dropped, they grew up with these characters. And they grew up with this dragon as well. Like, Toothless is one of the best animal headish characters in a cartoon. I thought he was like a great asshole, but also just pretty chill. Like, nigga, I'm a dragon. I do dragon shit. Also, I can't believe you're my master, but you know what? I kind of like you, dude. Like, that whole connection that they had, that vibe, that awkwardness, and that weirdness, him being like a hiccup. His name being Hiccup. Hiccup being the weird one out of all the Vikings or whatever, and Toothless being like supposedly the last of his kind, as this was it, a Night Fury or whatever. They have this bond and this connection, and then there's just a romance thing going on with America Ferrera's character, whose name for some reason I can't remember.
Astrid.
And then they have all the little side characters, which are voiced by, again, Jonah Hill and TJ Miller, I think, until the third one. And I thought Kristen Wiig, of course, like they Rough Nut and Tough Nut are just so fucking hilarious. But Kristen Wiig in the third one is just off the fucking chain.
And yeah, I was happy she came back, because she's a hot ass mess.
I love her character. I loved her in the first one. I was like, oh, she just don't give a fuck. And by the time they get to the third film, she is just all the way out there. She got fucking mold in her hair and shit. Like, she is just full on. Like I feel like she's a vegan. I feel like she's the vegan of the Vikings. But she also does hash. Like, she's really fucking out there. She's a whole.
Okay. I've always thought she was on like a combination of mushrooms and peyote, but I guess, you know, if you want to throw in some veganism, sure.
Yeah. He's fucking out there, man. Yeah, they do the first two films. The first film is him finding a dragon and getting the Vikings to not kill dragons anymore, because that's what his pops is all about. The second film is him finding out his mother's alive, and she's a hippie. She's a dragon hippie lady. And
she's a dragon whisperer.
Yeah, they say dragon whisperer. I say dragon hippie. Because she had a cane hook and everything. Like, she was floating on dragons, dog. Like, and she's a beast. Like, she's actually like a fighting beast. And the father ends up dying. So there's loss in every film. In the first film, he loses his leg, but that's his connection with Toothless, because Toothless loses part of his tail, which is why he couldn't fly. So they become a combination, they're a duo. In the second one, he loses pops. And in the third one, they kind of have to separate. That, like, you know, it's a bunch of stuff going on in these films. It's kind of deep, but it's never.
No, so, well, see, what I liked about it, like, okay. It's a dragon movie, so I'm gonna like it as a dragon movie. It's also an animated dragon movie that's drawn well and looks good, so I'm gonna like it because of that. And then it's Vikings, so I'm gonna like it because of that, because there's, you know, the chance of things being set on fire. But the thing that you're mentioning most that I liked about it is it starts out as an actual coming of age story, where they give you natural endings, so you're not only happy with the movie because it stood alone by itself and told you a whole story and built you a world, but you're excited and looking forward to them coming back and continuing the story. So yeah, you know, we get the first one and it's like a 4-year break, and you get the second one and everybody in there is like competent and you're interested in them. So like, you know, Astrid makes up for the lack of aggro in Hiccup, because, you know, Hiccup is all peace loving and he doesn't believe that there has to be contention between humans and dragons. But again, you know, he lives in a world where his dad is the chieftain, has brought a measure of peace to it because he's been a badass dragon hunter on his side, you know, in his time. It's what he did to save his people and secure their land. So I really liked all of that. And I love his core group, especially the little short dude who, you know, with his delusions of grandeur. And, Jonah Hill's character is, and between Snotlout and TJ and Toughnut always in his ear, I was like, I don't understand how he doesn't have a deeper complex than he has, because, you know, everything is backhanded with them, but it grew as you grew. If you were an adult watching these movies, there's plenty in here for you to still, you know, lob onto. There's action, there's adventure. Again, it's drawn well. And Toothless is a badass. And the more you I don't really care about the people. I care about Toothless. You know, I was Toothless, like, is he
a new ability every fucking film, dog? He gets up every sequel. Like, you didn't know he could do this, did you? And I'm like, wait, what?
Toothless is, you know, he's the Saiyan of dragons, because he's going to level up every single time, and it's going to be ridiculous. But this is some of the best use of voice acting and that I've seen in a long time. But when it came to the third one, I was curious how they were going to do it, because, you know, Valka has basically backed her son's play that they need to be dragon protectors, and they're dragon raiders on the boats to free the dragons. And I was wondering how they were going to make that work, given how young he was to become chieftain, and the fact that he's still trying to get his entire, you know, his little pocket of the world has agreed that, you know, dragons are good and we can live with them, but they have the alpha. So I was just curious what they were going to do to blow it out into the bigger world. So when you realize that the major point in this one is, you know, the other Vikings want the dragons back, and they now realize they need the alpha, and the new bad guy in this one they bring in, he's creepy, and him and his dragon,
he's super fucking, like, he reminds me of a like a sorcerer, but like the lead singer in a band called Sorcerer.
All the way down to the you know, the icy tips, the frosted tips on his hair. Yeah,
right. It's like what Nick Cannon imagines he would look like if he were a white hotep, like a white tap. I feel like that's what Nick Cannon would walk around doing with his life. But he also looks like Christopher Walken, he does look like Christopher Walken. It's a really creepy. Who did the voice for that character? Because I couldn't figure it out.
Let's look.
I thought I had this up, and I don't. And I forgot to stay after the credits to look, because I also wanted to see who they replaced TJ Miller with, because that clearly was not his voice in the third one.
Justin Ruppel is Toughnut in this one.
Yeah. They got somebody who can make it sound like that might be TJ Miller, but he doesn't sound like a complete douche ass. So you know it's not TJ Miller. Justin Ruppel. Did I know him? No, I have no idea who this is. Good for that guy. It took one guy to fuck up for him to get a come up.
Who was apparently he was in Spider-Man Homecoming and Fate of the Furious too. So apparently we should know who he is. Did you just die? He's one of the people who die in movies.
Yeah. Murray Abram was Grimmel. And this guy plays creepy people and stuff. I've seen him in a creepy before. So
yeah, well, he did it. I mean, they didn't make him look anything like himself, obviously, but they still had like that elongated face with the attitude and the eyes. And mm-hmm. he looked like a great villain. And F. Murray Abram is, you know, he's got an amazing voice. So, but I mean, he just had this kind of like nonchalance. Like if there's a dude running around with like pimp tendencies, it's Grimmel. But like, you know, the whole juxtaposition between his story and Hiccup's, you know, Hiccup found a light fury and decided that he wanted to save it. And, you know, Grimmel, his claim to fame was murdering a night fury, and that became his thing. So it was really interesting for them to bring in this other character, especially when they started like revealing that he knew Hiccup's father and that he went all, you know, art of war on the tactics for how he was going to make things come in. But I also liked how they advanced the intimate relationships between all the people. So, you know, Hiccup is chieftain, Hiccup's relationship with his mother, and it was Cate Blanchett both times for the voice. So that was really cool because it almost didn't sound like her because she did something just she Blanchetted it and she made a voice that's just Volca. But I like how they didn't let her overshadow her son.
No, they kept her. They let him grow. Like she's just an addition to his growth in both films.
Yeah, and how she was like being very, it kind of reminded me a little of the conversations that happened between Tessa Thompson's character and mom, Ms. Rashad, in Creed 2, where like she's going here and it's like she's kind of whispering in her ear saying, you know, hey, you know, do you still believe in him? Are you encouraging him? Have you done what you need to? So it was really cool to see them kind of give them a deeper dynamic of their relationship. But I also like the fact that they didn't just jump into the movie and say, oh, they were in love at the end and now we're going to have a love story at the beginning. So it was really funny when they're on the cliff going, yeah, we ain't ready for that. I don't know what these people, they keep talking about, you know, we ain't there yet.
I didn't even see it like that. She actually, but you're right. She did do that with Astrid. Kind of like, they're like, you should go talk to him. You know, maybe he needs somebody he enjoys being around to talk to right now. No.
Yeah.
What it's about.
It was really cool. That's how it felt like it's still something that kids could relate to because it felt very mother-daughter-ish, but it also felt, you know, kind of like I got your back in the sisterhood. So if you're older, you still could look at this and watch this movie and get something out of it in the relationship. But at the end of the day, I was just super happy that this story is really a love story for Toothless. Toothless is going to get a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. And it's what they did with this new dragon, which they don't. I like that they don't name her because she is wild. And they don't try to tame her into being like one of the dragons because the whole point of this is that, you know, he is kind of going back into his atmosphere and still learning about himself. He is also, like Hiccup, still a growing boy, just a growing dragon.
And they let it be natural. But it was really cool where, you know, you're kind of looking at this and that her introduction into the whole story is the reminder that Toothless has his own path that he's supposed to be on, because like you said, with every movie he gets a new power, but all of those powers all indicate that Toothless in and of himself is supposed to be ruling. He is the ruling alpha.
Yeah, he's destined, like, but just like is destined,
right? So but his
is there.
Yeah, but it was really, I like the way they played it, that they each had a destiny. And you know, for the first movie and the second movie, you kind of get this whole, you know, peace, love, and harmony, dragons and humans together forever. And then at the beginning of the third movie, they slowly start to make you question whether or not, you know, their needs can be met by one common goal, one common conclusion. And I think that's what makes this a good movie. I think this movie is less of a standalone than the first and the second one, but I thought it was a great wrap up and a great way to come back and bring this trilogy to an end.
Yeah, that's why I'm glad I watched the first two films, because I think the second one works as a standalone because they still have a villain. I think for me, what makes the third one not as much as a standalone is the fact that the villain Grimmel is so fucking carefree. He really is just here. He's not super developed. Somebody hired him to do something. His whole conquest is to kill all of the Night Fairies that he ever comes across in the world. He finds out his left, and he's like, well, no, that's really the only thing that interests me about taking this job, because you motherfuckers are kind of trash. I really don't get along with you. Me and my dragon-killing dragons will go ahead and just take care of this for y'all, and whatever the hell y'all want to do with the other flying mongrels amongst you mongrels, go ahead. I don't really care.
Yeah, he was just here for the death. He was just here for the murder. And but I thought he was developed in a way that, you know, as an adult, I'm watching this and I was like, okay, so you slaved two dragons to your purpose and turned them into dragon killers. And they don't even realize what it is that you've done to them. And I thought that was a nice subtle commentary running underneath there, that he's murdered. And he's basically turned his dragons against other dragons. But when they reveal how he does it and you start to realize where he gets what he gets to do it to him, you're just like, man, He needs to die.
No, he's a trash ass character for sure. He is trash.
It was great. It was great. I mean, everybody had, you know, came to their fitting purpose. They let it happen naturally. There was enough mayhem and carnage and fire for those of us who were like, because Vikings burn things, you know? But there was emotional depth. I thought it was just a tick too long in the middle. And that's only because I felt like they were doing a really good job of kind of unwinding everything and then wrapping up and pulling all the loose ends and the threads together. There were just a couple of times where I felt like they let a gimmick run a little long before they got to the punchline of the joke and then moved the story forward. But it wasn't anything that took away from the storyline. It was secondary development of other people who lived in there. And, you know, that was really interesting. It's just, you know, so it wasn't anything that was like really super distracting. It's just the kind of thing that you notice when you're like, y'all didn't feel like you needed to over explain this much to the first two. So I feel like they expected people to come to this movie, not necessarily having seen all three. So they did just a little extra talking and expository than I had come to expect from how this, the dialogue and the rhythm of the story from the first two. So that was slightly different. But once I got used to it, it wasn't distracting. It's just something I noticed because I was like, yeah, I don't really feel like you needed to explain that to me last time. Why are we talking about this? But it'll be really helpful for people who haven't necessarily seen all three movies who are going to this movie. Because like maybe their kids saw this movie at somebody else's house and they don't care if mommy hasn't seen it. Mommy, you need to go see this movie kind of thing.
But I mean,
you know.
It for me, I think part of the reason that occurs is because this is supposedly the last film. Like, this is it. So you kind of, this is just like that last wing, that last slice of pizza. You kind of savor it. You kind of want to, why are you taking so long to eat that fucking pizza, dog? Because it's the last one, bro. It's the last one.
We got a couple extra layers of things because once it's gone, it's gone.
That's essentially it. They double dipped a lot. Like, for instance, one of the things that it doesn't necessarily bug me, but it's something that I noticed while watching all three of these films so close together. They do a lot of yada yada in the traveling back and forth from place to place because they have dragons. So if you like take a bathroom break at the wrong time, you could come back to this movie and they could have traversed between two locations four times in that span. And in this film, there's a lot of long traveling. But once they get to the area they're trying to find or the in-between area, then they start doing that traversing back and forth shit. And I'm like, oh, my God, supposedly this took forever to get from point A to B. But now everybody is ziplining back and forth between the two like it's nothing. Yeah. Like,
but they did make it logical when like you realize the people of Burke, you know, have to do something drastic in order to protect their dragons at one point in this movie. And then Volka's like, I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to cover our back trail. Now, it's logical to believe because it's the dragon whisperer, dragon raider who's got mad skills in the sky that Volka can, if not burdened by trying to keep a whole group of people together, get from A to B real quick. But the little raiding parties, I mean, like, nah, y'all, nah.
Yeah, they include the buffoons in this. And yeah. It's like, bro, these bumbling fucks would not have been able to traverse this sky.
I like, at least two of y'all fell down off your dragons at least three times on the way here. Ain't nobody get here this smoothly. Y'all lying.
They constantly falling off their dragon. And then the somebody behind. And then the other thing that I really liked about this film is the way that they grow the characters. They grow Toothless, they grow Hiccup, they grow the other characters in the raid group, right? They don't necessarily grow Volka because she is, you know, full ass grown mommy stat.
She is all the way grown.
Yeah, she good. Like she's completely fine. They grow, you know, Gerard Butler's character in a way of, you know, learning to be more open and understanding and not just rush at everything with a hammer in his hand or an axe in his hand, right? He becomes more of a character. He becomes more of a father, I think, throughout the two films. But what they did as far as upgrading Hiccup's character, his wardrobe, I thought was like peak in the third one. That fucking dragon flying suit, I was like, they put that shit in a fighting game. Like, I would rock that in Tekken in a hot fucking second, and then giving them the ability to use these gliders when necessary, because that's something they tend to have the same themes throughout the films. We found dragons. Somebody's trying to take our dragons away. Second film, we got dragons. Somebody's trying to take our dragons away. Third film, we got dragons. Somebody's trying to take our dragons away. And at a point in each film, they don't have access to their dragons or the dragons that they're used to, and they have to figure out how to save their dragons without their dragons.
But and that's the thing that I really liked about this one is because, you know, when you first meet Hiccup in the first one, he's super innovative. He's always trying to build stuff. He's really curious, but he's also accident prone and likely to, you know, fall the fuck off a cliff and have to have somebody come save him. So I like the fact that even as they were growing them up, the way that they got themselves out of the situation where they didn't have access to their dragons, it always came back to Hiccup's innovation, even when he didn't realize, you know, even when he forgot that that's who he was at the beginning. So I did like the fact that they did that. And that was a really smart way to be able to make you not so annoyed that this movie really truly is about someone's trying to take our dragons again. Every time.
To get rid of that fucking fire sword, though. I'm sorry. That shit was completely useless to him. In a world full of dragons where dragons have dragon skin, and you've already met Drago, who rocks a dragon cape, for him to constantly be pulling out that fire sword and lighting it up like it's game time and then getting his ass whooped every time. Oh, bruh.
Yeah. I really wanted them to give the fire sword to Astrid and just let her wreak havoc.
I was like, please pick up his fire sword because you are much better at doing the action shit than he is. He is just not, it's not him.
But I did like how they balanced their relationship and they let her grow and they also let her speak up more. And then once she started speaking up more, you started to get these other nuances and development throughout the relationship, except for, you know, Roughnut and Toughnut's dumbass. I'm in, who's with me? You know, they don't care.
God, they didn't have any Toughnut in this movie. He says the same shit through the whole movie.
But he was funny. He's like, you know, he's trying to be like, I'm going to be your marriage mentor. I'm going to show you how to get a chick. And you're like,
what's up with that beard shit? No, crying my beard.
He can't grow one. No. He's a Viking who can't grow facial hair.
But because he can't grow facial hair, he keeps pulling these pigtails together, so crying my beard. And we were in the theater. Ashley was like, so is he gay? And I'm like, no, he's just a fucking nut.
But that's playing on one of those things that it was a sign that you had reached maturity in adulthood, that you could be actually trusted to go along on a raiding party, is when you were a man, like physically and mentally. And a part of that is your beard. And Toughnut wants to be grown. He wants to be taken seriously. A homie cannot grow facial hair. But you know, that was one of the things that you got about them. It's like they were still young girls and young boys. They were young adults. And he wanted to be grown. And he wasn't there yet. So he was always trying to rush the process. And everybody just looking at him like, all right, man, we know you got them things off your helmet braided around your face. And you know we can see that, right? But okay.
I thought it was interesting that between the first and the second film, and I don't know what the exact time when the first one came out, maybe it was, what, 2012 or something? Or was it earlier than that? I'm taking a guess here.
I think it was earlier than that.
It was 2010. So the first film came out in 2010. The second film came out in 2014. And this film is out now in 2019. So there's 4 years between the first two and then 5 years between, give or take, 5 years between the last one and this one. And between the first one and the second one, there is a 4-year gap. But between the third one and the second one, it's only been a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like I don't know if they started working on this as far later, if they just been working on this for a while and they just kept with that storyline, or if this was always in the works that it was only supposed to be a year later from this one, even though it was for, like, basically on their production for the first two. But I like it that way because from looking at the poster, I couldn't tell if Hiccup was supposed to be a grown man now. Like, that's, yeah. Worrying about that. When I walked into the movie, I was like, so is he going to be like 23 now, or is he supposed to be like 18 or 19 and he's still getting in the groove? And essentially that's what it is. They're coming into young adulthood, and like, this is kind of their growing up. Is the partings and the changes and all the things that happen in this film are just, you know, they're essentially, this movie's telling you this is part of growing up. Like, you know, everybody has to find their path. So
it's one of the few movies that is actually does on-screen coming of age across a trilogy, right? And they end at the exact right moment. They jump time at the exact right moment. They move the story group forward at the exact right moment and at the exact right pace. And I really enjoyed it. I had fun. It's I really hope we get to see America Ferrera in three dimensions in a movie now that this is wrapped up, because, you know, I would like to see her in more movies and less of someone else. And I figure if they're going to confuse you, maybe they should just cast the other one.
Now, I don't know if I was paying attention to the trailers when we were seeing them during movies. I know we had trailers before screeners or some movie I went to for this. But I'm glad I wasn't paying attention, because part of the intrigue for me while watching this was what this dinosaur world, oh, not dinosaur, this dragon, this hidden dragon world was going to look like.
And man, that was cool.
I saw a trailer on television after we saw this, and they completely showed it. And I was like, oh, fuck, I'm glad I didn't see this.
Yeah, I didn't see anything. I only saw the teaser trailer for this, and I'm really glad. But animated movies are one of the reasons why I stopped watching the anything past the official release trailer. So if I've seen a teaser, and the teaser shows more than a couple of scenes, I don't watch any other trailers, because I'm tired of having movies spoiled for me, you know.
I just don't even understand why you would cut a trailer. I don't know why you would cut a trailer that has the hidden world in it at all.
Why? Because they've lost their minds.
The movie, that is literally the whole driving force of the movie. It's what's beyond the end of the world. What happens when you get to the big, great waterfall that his father told him about as a kid? Also, like you said, the time jump and shit. I like how they showed him as a child with his father, and then they streamlined that directly to a jump later in the film. That was really cute and cool. But I'm watching this film, and the whole time I'm like, so what is this hidden world gonna look like? That's what I want to see. I'm waiting to see this. And then I come home and I see that trailer, and there's literally a dragon flying through it. And I was like, it wasn't even just any scene of them going into the dragon world. It is the scene.
Yeah.
When into the hidden world. It is the scene.
Yeah,
it's still in the trailer.
Even though you see it in the trailer, it doesn't play on TV the way it does once you see it in context. But I'm really tired of them doing that. There's no reason for it. I think they have this idea that they have to get there has to be some gimme. And I honestly think, with respect to this movie, maybe because it's still aimed at a lower age group, they have this idea they don't think the same things are the important parts of the story as the fans and the audience do. So when they're making decisions about what they show, they were thinking in terms of, what are we going to show about Hiccup? What are we going to show about Valka? What are we going to show about Astrid? How much of the bad guy are we going to show? And we're all thinking, what's the hidden world going to look like? What does this mean for Toothless? I see that there's a white dragon on the poster. What's that about? Is it a girl? What's up? You know, so I think that at some point in time, when it comes down to the marketing process and whoever's doing the editing and the cuts for the trailers, they don't have the same priorities for what they think is important in this franchise that we did. And I think that's how you ended up having them cut things that you're like, you would never do that if this was live action. That's like the money shot. Or they think, well, you know, it's not going to look the same in your movie once you have it in context. It'll be more important. Yeah, so
they could have gone approaches. They went with the dragon, the light fury. They went with that, but essentially they could have either went with that, or they could have went with just taking Grimmel and putting him on a poster with those two fucking fang growing dragons. Because that shit
was nasty.
Started growing. I was like, yo, what kind of fucking dragon? And we've seen all, that's another thing I love about this film. The designers for this shit love drawing dragons, because they've got so different damn dragons. There's got to be 100 different dragons in these films. They take time and detail and design, size, everything. They really create this, they really give magnitude to how big the dragon world really is. And every film, it gets bigger. So when I'm thinking, I'm like, you could either did the cell of the Light Fury, what's going on there? Is this a love story? Or you could have did, who is this monstrous ass dude that's rolling up with two dragons on leashes? And they look like and they look like deadly ass insect scorpions mixed with dragons. Like, what the fuck is this? This is wild. But that's not what they did in this trailer. They show a little bit of the love thing. They don't really give Grimmel much attention at all, and they really should have, because he has a lot of selling points as far as dialogue, and he really just hates dealing with Vikings in general. They instead show a dragon flying through the hidden world. And I was like, what the fuck decision? This is somebody who cut a trailer that saw a pretty scene and was like, we should put that in the trailer, and did not understand at all the significance of it.
Probably. Either that, or they're like, oh, this isn't the driving storyline. It's fine. I'm telling you, I don't understand. I don't know what they're thinking when they do these things. I think it impacts people, what draws people to a movie, or it can make people like me who are like, well, I guess I've seen everything that was important about the movie, so why do I need to go see your film now? Thankfully, The Hidden World as a movie as a whole has so many different beats and so many different things and so many different threads that are being woven together to make the final chapter. I almost said final countdown. Lord Jesus. The final chapter, and bring everything together in a graceful finale, that there was no way, unless they just gave the whole movie to you in the trailer, that there won't be something interesting and fun to bring you to this movie. But that's why I say, Chris, if you know, I think you might actually like this trilogy.
You should check it out, bro. You don't have to deal with the Lego movie songs on repeat constantly. There is literally no singing. The most annoying thing they do in every film for these is Jay Baruchel does an intro and an outro for every film. And those were the only things that I kind of found annoying, was his, in this world, there are dragons, and I was like, oh my God, please shut up, bro.
Honestly, if I had time, I was gonna try to see if I could turn it around and watch the other two films. I just didn't have the time to do it. But it's, I again, after watching some of the trailer and seeing, like I said, this is a trailer. This is a trilogy. I think all three films have been, like, on Rotten Tomatoes, have gotten like above 90%, and it's quietly one of the best reviewed trilogies like we've had. I think they all three of them were pretty well reviewed, or at least I know I've heard good things about them. So this is one of those quiet ones, a quiet animated trilogies, and I don't know what it is. Like, I'll go and see I've seen everything that involves Despicable Me, right? I've seen all three Despicable Me movies, the fucking spinoff films, seen all those. This one just, I'm very limited in which kids' films I go to see. You know, like, it was Coco, like, The Incredibles, the Despicable Me movies. For some reason, the How to Train a Dragon ones just, I don't know, it just missed me. And I think what it was is, after missing the first one, it was all the little mini, like, spinoff films. I just thought there were so many of them that I would just, like, I'm confused now. And I just got frustrated and didn't go to see them. But yeah, I'm going to check this out.
Yeah, you don't have to see a single one of the side movies. Those are all side journeys and side adventures. You can just stick with the main trilogy. But I also think the way that they drew this trilogy is sharply different than the way they've done any of the other ones that you named. That, especially with the very first one when it came out in 2010, it looked like a kid's movie with the way that Toothless is drawn, and the way and the aspects of his personality that they decided that they wanted to highlight when they were using him in promo and in commercials. So, you know, it would have been easy for that to fall under your radar. What?
They don't really show him being an asshole. That's what I was surprised about in the first film. They kind of show him being, like, funny and cool and playful, but he is not that in the first film. He's like, bro, don't fuck with me, dog. Like, every time Hiccup comes near him, for a good, almost the first half of the film, he is not seeing it for that white boy. He's like, bro, get away from me, dog. I swear to God, I'll flame you. I'm starving down here.
Toothless is not here for anybody's shit.
Yeah, and their introduction of him, the way that they can't see him at night, and like all that, just the whole introduction to Toothless. But I wonder if the way they drew him in the 2010 film versus how they draw them now, the more kiddie look was, I wonder if it was an accidental or just like, not, I don't want to say inescapable, but just just for that time period with the technology that they had then and the growth of the artists who've been working on it now and what probably new ideas have brought into the table, if that change over time kind of just really in sync worked with the film because the characters grow that much. They look kiddier in the first ones, and now they look more grown, they're more defined, etc. There's more detail to them.
Let me just say, as somebody who hasn't seen these films, is like, yeah, like I noticed that when I think that's why this third one almost got me into theater. Kind of watching going, this seems kind of adult. This seems like it's kind of a little bit more grown up than I've seen. Of those other films, when just the look of them look way more kiddie, this one was like, this actually seems kind of more serious. And I think you're right. I think we've seen that with, they've done that, obviously, when you have live action, you have something like, you know, the Harry Potter films. By the time you get to, like, I guess, like, halfway through the Harry Potter films, the audience of that film had already grown up, so you can be a little bit more adult with that, and not to mention your actors are also growing up as well. We see that with the CW shows, where people forget the CW shows used to be really, really fucking kiddie. And when you look at the CW shows now versus what they were when the CW first started, it's drastically different. It's because, well, that kid audience you had are now young adults. And so you can be a little more gritty. So I think that they probably did do that with the animated style going, like, people saw this film when it first came out. When the first film came out, like 2011? 2010? Yeah, it's not
but also, ago. Like, the actual poster cover, he is a little boy. So mm-hmm. it's easy for you to just look at him and say, physically, this is a kid's movie. There's a kid on the poster, right. You know? Mm-hmm. And so the third one is the one where he is he's a mature young adult, 19, 20 years old. So, yeah, like not only did the animation technology and the layers of light and magic that they put into this, I guess we should actually call it Moonray since that's what it is, but whatever, you know, it grew up. But if you're not an animated movie, you're not a cartoon type person. And I say that excluding anime because that's anime has its own thing. You wouldn't go see How to Train Your Dragon unless you knew the book stories or you were like, I babysit a child, read these books as a child. It's the only time the child sat still. And I got hooked on these damn things because she writes with the same kind of evolving maturity that they gave the TV series. But I went to see it because I was like, there's no way that you can make a movie where the humans interacting with the Viking with the dragons are Vikings and there not be at least some kind of adult theme. I'm like, someone's gonna die and it's not just gonna be how Bambi's mama died at the beginning. And that's what I was like, I'm gonna go. I wanna see it. I wanna see what they can do. I'm like, am I gonna be mad at DreamWorks or am I gonna be happy? But yeah, it would have been very easy for you to take a look at this and say, this is a full-on 100% kids movie. But it's not even the first one. So I think that you would be pleasantly surprised, especially now that you can watch all three without having to wait.
Cool. All right. What would you guys give this film out of 10?
I think this is an 8.5, 9 out of 10 for me. I really like this movie. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Yeah, I give this one an 8.5, but I give the trilogy as a whole a 9.
Yeah,
I feel like you should definitely watch all of these. Again, this is something that you can add to your film collection now that it's complete. This is something that you can add to your viewing collection for family night. You and the kids can sit down and watch it. You and your college friends can watch it. You and your adult friends who come over to drink and play cards or shoot the shit can watch it. It works for all those atmospheres. It's just a fun film. Right. I dig it. And again, you don't have to sit through some of the tropes that you have to deal with when you have a Disney film. I know people like the films with the singing and the dancing and shit. Sometimes I just like watching a cartoon, you know, with characters that are developed and can do really amazing and cool shit because it's animated and there's a lot more freedom with animation. There's a lot more possibilities with animation.
I mean, they've got some great slapstick physical type comedy stuff that they did with the animation that takes the place of what Disney does with the song and dance. And I was absolutely okay with it.
Yep. I fucks with all of that. So 8.5 for the film itself, 9 for the whole trilogy, though. I'll probably end up like purchasing this just to watch it for the fuck of it.
Oh, yeah. I'm buying all three of these. Yeah. These are getting bought. I'm going to buy the box set now that they're all out. So, yeah, I'm at 8.5 for the movie, 9 overall.
Also, this film made its money back already across seas because it got released a month ago in Australia. So I'm trying to figure out why we got it so much later.
They're flipping release on a lot of movies. They don't really care about the U.S. market. We're a little precarious. Money's overseas.
Well, I brought this up. Like, I don't know why they did it with this film, because I feel like these films always make their money back. I mean, first of all, animated films almost, I rarely see when an animated film doesn't make its money back. But I do know for certain films that might not have a certain quality, the reason why you release them overseas is you feel like you might get a better reaction overseas and you can make that money back so that all that pressure on the domestic box office isn't there. I'm not going to name certain films that have done that before, because you're afraid that once critics get to it, it's going to drive those box office numbers down. And so I think that's why they've been flipping a lot more of these releases, at least for films that don't typically do that, right? Like, I know for a fact that, because Wonka's always, never let's forget that he gets Marvel movies before, like a week before we get them. Like, there are certain films that we know that, or studios that do release these things overseas or have their premieres overseas all the time. But there's been a drastic difference where I've seen it as far as almost like 2-3 weeks in advance now. Like, how early was Aquaman released overseas before it came here, right? It was like almost three weeks.
Yeah, it was like 2 weeks. And Civil War was released like 3 weeks to a month overseas before.
It was
overseas.
A month early.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So.
But also, some of it is driven by money. It's like, those film-going markets are far more stable than the domestic market right now. Mm. And like you said, sometimes domestic release has a tendency to depress things. So yeah, they're trying to get in where they can fit in. And a lot of people who before were disrespecting international markets realize, you know,
it's funny how that works though. It's funny how people's respect for the international market can fluctuate and change. Because I remember for the longest times, people saying the international markets didn't care. It really depends on the narrative you're trying to change. Because when it came to like The Last Jedi making a $1.3 billion, people pointed to the fact that it didn't do well in China, never mind the fact that Star Wars films never really do well in China, as the indication that somehow the movie flopped, which is just amazing to me. It's like me saying, especially I don't like the film, Aquaman made $1 billion, it didn't fucking flop. Like, guys, money is money. Well, we can talk about the differences between, you know, what you got to go in and what the money you make overseas versus the money you make domestically. We can go over that. It's still $1 billion.
Bro, money is like hit fucking Jurassic Park. That world shit went overseas and made a killing. And so did that fucking World of Warcraft movie. Like, those films didn't necessarily do as great as they wanted them to do here, especially World of Warcraft. But once that shit got released across seas, the ratings were different from critics. The money it made at the box office was complete payback on anything that they thought that it did here. So I get it. It's just, I thought it was interesting that this film was released in Australia January 3rd, and we're getting it now February 22nd. That's a huge early release.
They also don't have the same presumptions of trash movies that people think. King, the kid who would be king,
mm-hmm.
the little author movie,
yeah,
that's a good movie. And they put it out in January. People made assumptions about it. It's like, oh, it's a trash movie. That's why it's out in January. Oh, they're afraid to compete. It's why it's out in January. Oh, it's just another reboot. It's a retcon. And it's none of those things. It's legitimately a fun, good time. And it's flopped.
Well, I can also because say. I'll also say that they did a horrible job of promotion here in the DeMar film. Really,
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. They gave up on that movie domestically before a movie was even out.
Yeah.
But some of those presumptions that for those types of movies, for stories that aren't necessarily told in other types of international markets, they don't have some of those presumptions about what it means for the month when they release a movie. So a lot of places and a lot of distribution are flipping and going to their international market first so they can get some of that market buy-in, because they know they're not going to get it stateside. So I can understand it. It pisses me off because it makes it that much more difficult, because I live in a market where, you know, one of the first things I hear when I put a press inquiry, are we going to get this movie? Is it coming here? It's like, oh, well, this isn't a market where they're spending media dollars. And almost 9 times out of 10, it's a movie that's quote unquote toward a black audience, or it's a movie that they think is for a median income that they've convinced themselves doesn't exist in San Diego.
Yeah.
And
it's
that simple sometimes.
Yeah. It's a very fascinating thing. And it's just right. I'm very like, it's been an interesting thing seeing the U.S. box office and seeing these studios react to it and almost like panic and like we got to move on and do some other things, but like it's like when I see all these stories about how depressed the money wise the box office was for the first quarter of 2019, and I'm like, well, compared to what? Are you guys comparing to the last 2 years where you've had Star Wars films and followed by a Black Panther film, which you basically got like $2.5 billion in 2 months because of those two films? Like, yeah, you're not going to compete with that because you didn't have those kind of movies come out. It doesn't mean that people aren't going to theaters. It also means you're also competing now with a lot of high-quality stuff coming out on streaming services. Like, it's a changing dynamic. It doesn't mean that there's trouble or there's a problem or any of these things, but it's just fascinating to see me how we view things here in the States. And like I guess this is a bigger issue. Nobody's having like critical thinking skills. Cause I look at this going like, guys, not a fucking problem. It's like, it's clearly why you didn't have those kind of films coming out this year. So yeah, your market's going to be down a little bit.
But then think again, you know, I mean, think about it. It's like we sit here and you were asking people to exhibit critical thinking skills. There are people in this country who still have not truly processed the fact that ain't nobody in the world checking for what's happening in America anymore.
No.
Like, you know, and that's going to be a greater and a bigger factor about how things shake up, especially when it comes to pop culture and entertainment, you know, because there are some fandoms that are driven from here and then they explode out. But the majority of other fandoms, they don't need American money. They don't need U.S. dollars.
What was the name?
And they know it.
What was the name of that film in the Chinese box office that like ran the box for like 100 days straight or something like that? It was something. It was like a
It was like a romance joint.
It was some huge ass film. And it was like, it was the reason why, because people couldn't figure out why. It was like a last few years. It might have also happened. When did Homecoming, like 2 years ago? Because Homecoming came out in 2017, and people kept trying to figure out why the Homecoming numbers gross was low, and it was like because they're not releasing it in China for like another 2 months. And I think it's because like people, when you go release in China, like China has its own market of films they put out. People are like, yeah, we got to avoid the shit that's coming out in the Chinese box office market because that their local shit is going to eat anything you put out there. So you have to be strategic when you put things out in China. And so, like, everybody's film was coming out in China like a month after it already came out here in the States. And it's because it was basically avoiding some other shit. I can't remember what the film was, but it's something that people are like, it was like break smashing records. It's like, yeah, 100 straight days of this. I don't know what it is, but it's like, these are things that here in the States, nobody thinks about them. Like, people will write articles being like, oh, yeah, these numbers are low. I'm like, you do realize it's not going to release in China for like another like 2 months, right?
Yeah, really, that's why I always take all the box office numbers with a grain of salt until you start seeing the international numbers come in.
Yeah, like I said, like, again, take out the domestic numbers of some of these films and then look at the box office numbers. Like, I don't bring up the box office numbers of Aquaman, let's say it's coming mostly from international, to basically be like, that's like not good. But I'm like, that we, and I think we had this discussion when we were talking about Aquaman. It's like, that might change how WB markets this movie and what they do going forward, because it was a ridiculously lopsided like numbers. And you might start seeing a difference. Like, it's like, do they then start trying to figure out, well, can we do what we did internationally to duplicate that here on the domestic side? Or are they just going to sit there and go, oh, fuck domestic. Let's focus on catering to the international market and make all that fucking money. Like, we're going to start seeing that happening here. You know,
wait,
those films with The Rock, they mostly do not do well here. He's big overseas. He's big in China. Like, he's big in Asia.
Yeah, Rampage was ridiculous, but Rampage. It was driven for that because the aspects of the story that they highlighted were more the aspects that existed out in the international market. Mm. They barely even touched on what would have been bigger here, where that would have been the gamer side. Yep. But for How to Earn Your Dragon 2, they were like, oh, it didn't do very well. It only did $177 million. And I remember people making a big, huge deal saying, oh, the first one did $217 million. It's a flop. The second one didn't do well. But then they released it internationally, and that movie did 438 mil.
Yeah, like
so, mm-hmm. You know. So by the time they finished adding up all the numbers, they were sitting at $621.5 million on a $145 million budget movie.
They're happy. They're happy,
bro. You have to go. You have to go to China's site on box office and just look at the films that grossed the most money at the end of the year for each year for China. My God. Like, they have a completely different market for their shit. It's great. Like, I kind of want to sit and have a Chinese New Year night of watching films and just go watch all their films that made a whole shitload of money across seas. Because these films, like, they come here and we absolutely make fun of them. Like, this mermaid shit, I've seen clips from this film across the internet since it came out. I didn't realize that this shit was a hit.
You know what the film I was talking about? I just saw what it is. Wolf Warrior 2.
Wolf Warrior?
Mm-hmm. 5.6 billion.
Bruh, it's like...
Yeah, I know that's not dollars, but it's like, yo, it's like... These are the films that they release, and they make a lot of money over there. And people are like, yo, we gotta avoid releasing our shit around these films. And it's a big deal. Like, they're not, yeah. The Mermaid, yeah. I'm looking at the cover for The Mermaid. Bruh. Yeah, we left.
I've seen it. I know exactly why it made that much money, but I'm always just like, but why?
I'm not gonna lie. I do want to see Wolf Warriors. I do because
I do. I want to see Wolf Warrior and Operation Red Sea and Detective Chinatown. Like, I kind of want to go through 2018's top four.
You need to see Techno Chinatown. I've seen some of it, and I was like, I have to see the rest of this. I don't understand. How are these things not in my life? But yeah, you need to. Yeah.
Aquaman is number 15. Get this.
Hollywood Reporter just suddenly started talking about, can China save Alita?
Yeah. I just saw the other one. China's going to save, it's going to be the first Transformers film. Bumblebee's going to be the first film that China saves, Transformers film that China saves. It's like, they're making their money there. Like, number 15 on their all-time box office list is Aquaman. Number 18 is Venom. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, you know, which is the one that we all fucking hated, is the one that I think did better than the original Jurassic World. Like,
it did.
You gotta, it's a different thing. Jurassic
World is just, like, the whole series is just a whole bunch of, they're kaijus, man.
Yeah,
people are bringing back. I'm like, those are going to do well. That's why I was like, American sensibility about what does and what doesn't play and what is and what isn't good. You know, it's like everybody over here went crazy about Crazy Rich Asians. And they're like, oh, but it's not going to play well. And then as soon as that stuff hits Singapore, it was a whole different ballgame. So it's like, especially when you're talking about like non-Disney animated movies, always have to step up their game. And I think one of the things that was smart with respect to How to Train Your Dragons is they did not shift away from their primary artistic style as the trilogy and the franchise grew. So there are certain aspects of the movie that already have what people liked the first time. So when I fully expect when this movie hits China, it's gonna go out on a high note. It's gonna do its thing. It's gonna be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Quick announcement. We're gonna get more details later, but This week we have officially secured the theaters for our Avengers Endgame screening in L.A. and in D.C. again, just like we did for Black Panther. The screenings will be April 27th, that Saturday. So if you're in the West Coast and you want to go to the screener, there's going to be one in L.A. And if you're on the East Coast and you want to come out and meet us in D.C., there will be one in D.C. I believe we're going to try to put tickets out on sale in a few weeks. aiming for March 15th. Now, I realize the last time we did this, tickets went on sale within, you know, Brandon, how long did they sell out? Like minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So letting everybody know now up front, we're doing like a pre-announcement before we do this. We even get the sites up together for the tickets. So be prepared around March 15th, probably around noon. We'll probably be when tickets go on sale for these events. We're gonna take this time also to kind of figure out what we're gonna do. I know here on the East Coast, we're thinking about doing a show afterwards. That'll be they're both in different theaters than they were for the Black Panther events. The one here, we're thinking about on the East Coast, we're thinking about doing some kind of podcast afterwards. And there might be something that happens on the West Coast as well. So just stay tuned. We're gonna have loads of fun. So again, that's April 27th. And as we get closer to date, we'll get more information. Now, me saying this, I'm putting this out there now, it does not mean to hit me up asking me to hold your tickets for you. No, that's not happening this time.
We're not doing that. We're not holding tickets.
We're not holding tickets.
We're not doing it.
That is why we're doing this up front now, to let you guys know that March 15th is when tickets will go on sale, so you can be prepared to get those tickets yourself, all right? Just letting everybody know now, all right? One on in L.A., so if you're on the West Coast, be one in L.A. at the Cinemark, and there will be one here at AMC in D.C. The one here in D.C., I know, is right next to a Metro stop. So, again, if you want that. And, again, just stay tuned. We'll get more information as we get closer to the date of the ticket sale. So, there's that. And, folks, we'll have another Black Critic Roundtable that we're going to record tomorrow, hopefully be out on Saturday, as we talk about the Best Director nominations and the Best Film nominations, because the Oscars are on Sunday. So hopefully we'll get that out there, so make sure you listen to that. And, folks, thank you guys very much for listening, and until next time, we're out of here. Peace.